Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're doing something a little bit unusual today.
Yeah.
Typically, we're looking at the here and now or maybe digging into some history. But today, we're technically jumping forward.
So it's a little bit.
We have this mega report on the desk from Teekin Game, and the date stamped right on the cover is February 9, 2026.
It's a bit of a time capsule, isn't it? But a time capsule from a very, very near future.
Exactly. And if you are listening to this right now while holding a smartphone, scrolling with your thumb, looking down at that flat rectangle of glass, this report has some news for you. You are officially living in the flat screen era. And according to this document, that era is about to end.
That is the big headline. The report is titled The Biological Convergence Revolution, and the premise is, well, it's pretty aggressive.
Yeah, it is.
It argues that February 2026 is the tipping point. It's the moment where a society stops using technology as a tool, something you pick up, manipulate, and then put down and starts, you know, inhabiting it.
Inhabiting technology. That is a heavy phrase. It sounds like the tagline for a sci-fi movie.
It does.
But the report frames it as the ultimate evolution of convenience. It's not about cyborgs or anything like that. It's about flow.
It really all comes down to friction. I mean, think about how much friction exists right now between you and your digital life.
Okay.
You have a thought, I need to check the weather. You have to stop walking, fish a device out of your pocket, unlock it, find the app, wait for it to load, and then read the screen.
Right. That's like five or six steps.
That is a chain of friction points. This report argues that by 2026, hardware has finally caught up to the dream of zero friction. The barrier between I want to do this and it is done just, it dissolves.
So to structure this deep dive, we're going to follow the path the report lays out. It dissects this revolution by biological function, which I think is a fascinating way to organize a tech report.
It really is.
It starts with the brain, moves to the eyes, then down to the hands, and finally the body itself. And honestly, the section on the brain is where the biggest leap seems to be happening.
Without a doubt. This is where we see the transition from hardware to what the industry is calling wetware.
We're talking about Neuralink here. Now, we've heard about them for years, usually with medical applications, helping people with paralysis, that sort of thing.
Right, medical breakthroughs.
But this report highlights a specific release, the Neuralink Gaming SDK.
And that's huge. For anyone not deep in the tech weeds, SDK stands for Software Development Kit. This is a massive signal.
Why is that?
It means Neuralink isn't just a medical device anymore. It is an open platform. They've handed developers the keys to build consumer experiences that interface directly with the brain.
The example they use is a game called Resident Evil Requiem. Now, I remember playing the old Resident Evil games. You're panicking, fumbling with the controller, trying to aim at a zombie while your hands are sweating.
Oh, yeah. It's stressful.
But the report says, in this 2026 version, you don't press a button to shoot. You just think, shoot.
And that changes everything about the feedback loop. Technically speaking, what we're looking at is the death of input lag.
Yeah.
In traditional gaming, or even just using a mouse, there's a delay. Your eye sees the target, your brain processes it, sends the signal down your spine to your hand, your muscles contract, the button clicks.
We are talking milliseconds, sure, but it is still a delay. It's a physical gap.
It is. But the report details how the Neuralink SDK bypasses the physical body entirely. It converts the brain's motor cortex signals directly into game code.
So it's thought-action coordination.
Exactly. You aren't piloting the character. The character is an extension of your will. The report actually calls it zero latency intent.
That is fascinating, but it also raises a question about skill. If I just think run or aim, does the game do the hard work for me, or do I still need, you know, mental discipline?
That is the nuance the report digs into. It suggests that the skill shifts from physical dexterity, how fast you can move your thumb, to mental focus. Ah, okay. If you panic in real life, your brain signals become erratic and your character panics or misses the shot. If you can keep your mind calm, your aim is true. It actually makes the experience more intimate, not less.
So you have to master your own mind to master the game.
Precisely. The barrier between player and protagonist is gone. You are the avatar.
And that's the definition of biological convergence.
Exactly. The tech isn't distinct from you anymore. But of course, playing a game is one thing. Navigating the real world is another. And that brings us to the second pillar of the report.
The eyes.
The eyes.
Right, the visual interface. We're talking about AR or augmented reality. Now, historically, AR has been, well, clunky.
Very clunky. Giant headsets, battery packs clipped to your belt.
Yeah, looking like a welder from the year 3000.
Yeah.
But the report claims 2026 is the year of the Optic G4.
The form factor is the breakthrough here. The source material emphasizes that the Optic G4 is the size of standard prescription glasses.
No bulk. No weird wires.
It says indistinguishable from high-end eyewear.
And because of that size reduction, the use case just completely shifts. It says here the environment becomes a large desktop.
Think about what that means for your daily workflow. The report explicitly says you no longer need to take your phone out of your pocket.
So notifications, maps, video conferences, they're rendered in 3D space.
Right.
So if I'm working down the street, my map isn't on a little rectangle in my hand. It's just there, floating on the sidewalk in front of me.
Exactly. It is ambient computing. And this is a crucial concept to grasp.
Right.
Currently, we have interruptive computing. Your phone buzzes, you stop what you're doing, you look down, you attend to the device.
Sure.
With the Optic G4, the information is overlaid on your reality. You don't check it. You just see it. Mm. It exists in the same visual plane as the street, the traffic, the people.
The report makes a pretty bold claim here, though.
Mm.
It's hinting at the death of the phone.
It's the logical conclusion, isn't it? From an analytical perspective, it just makes perfect sense.
People love their phones. I mean, it's a security blanket. We hold them when we're nervous.
It is a habit, certainly, but analyze the utility. A smartphone is essentially a pocket-sized screen and a processor.
Okay.
If your glasses provide a better, larger, private screen that you don't have to hold, the visual utility of the phone drops to zero. The phone might still exist in your pocket as a compute puck.
Just a battery and a processor.
Yeah. But as a thing you look at, it is becoming obsolete in this 2026 landscape.
That is a strange mental image. A world where no one is looking down. Everyone's looking up, or at least looking ahead, engaging with these floating menus that only they can see.
It changes social etiquette, too. But the report points out a gap.
What's that?
If you can control things with your mind using Neuralink, and you can see things that aren't there using AR, you still have a problem.
You can't touch them.
You can't touch them. And that is the third pillar, touch, the haptic feedback.
Right. This is where the report dives into the Tekken Smart Ring, specifically Gen 4.
Yeah.
Now, I've used haptic controllers in VR before. They rumble when you hit something. It's basically a fancy Xbox controller. But the report calls this electrostatic haptics. That sounds completely different.
It is not a rumble. That is the key distinction. Old haptics use tiny motors to shake the device.
Right.
This new ring uses electrical signals to stimulate the nerve endings in your fingertips directly.
So it's hacking the nervous system again, just like Neuralink, but at the fingertip.
In a way, yes. The example the report gives is touching air. Let's say you see a virtual dinosaur in your AR glasses. You reach out to pet it.
Okay.
Obviously, there's nothing there physically. But as your hand gets close, the ring stimulates your nerves to create the sensation of texture like rough scales or the coldness of metal.
That is wild. So my brain sees the dinosaur, my hand feels the dinosaur.
And your brain accepts the reality.
Wow.
It closes the feedback loop. The report argues that without touch, the biological convergence fails because the illusion breaks.
The magic is gone.
The magic is gone. A gadget you can't feel isn't a gadget, to quote the text. If you reach for a virtual door handle and your hand passes through it with no sensation, it's over. But if you feel the resistance, then it's real to your brain.
It's just incredibly cool. We're talking about generating programmable physical realities.
Exactly. Imagine shopping online. Instead of just looking at a picture of a sweater, you can reach out and feel the fabric weave.
That's the commercial application.
That's the commercial application the report hints at. You can feel the quality of a product before you buy it, all from your living room.
Okay, so we've got the brain, the eyes, and the hands. But there's one more section that feels a bit more grounded, literally. The body.
Yes, the biosensing fabric section.
This is where we move away from gaming and into what looks like extreme health optimization.
Yeah.
We've seen smartwatches that count steps, but this is different.
It is the difference between wearing a computer on your wrist and weaving the computer into your shirt. The report details nanothreads. These are conductive fibers woven directly into clothing that act as medical-grade sensors.
And they aren't just counting steps. The data points here are intense. Heart rate, sure, but also cortisol levels and blood sugar.
Cortisol is the big one. That is your stress hormone.
So my shirt knows if I'm stressed out before I do.
That is exactly the point. The report describes a system where this data syncs with a personal AI, referencing a Tekken morning report. Let's play out a scenario.
Go for it.
You are in a high-stakes meeting. Your boss asks a tough question. You think you're calm, but your cortisol spikes and your heart rate creates a micro tremor.
My poker face is good, but my biology is selling me out.
Right. The shirt detects the spike. It pings your personal AI. Your AR glasses, which only you can see, flash a subtle blue light or a text prompt. Breathe. Heart rate elevated. Lowering volume of incoming audio to reduce sensory load.
Wow. So the tech is actively managing my physiological state in real time.
It's shifting health from reactive, going to the doctor when you feel sick, to predictive and continuous. You don't have to do anything. You just get dressed in the morning.
It is amazing how integrated this ecosystem is.
Yeah.
But I want to pivot to the hardware itself for a second, because usually when we talk about a tech revolution, we're implicitly talking about a mountain of e-waste.
Oh, absolutely. New phones, new chargers.
Old stuff going into a landfill.
Yeah.
The report highlights a shift in the ecosystem called modularity.
This was one of the most surprising economic insights in the text for me. By 2026, the consumer mindset has shifted. We aren't buying disposable gadgets anymore. We're investing in hardware that never ages.
Explain how that works. If I buy these fancy AR glasses, surely they'll be obsolete in 2 years.
Not the frames and not the lenses. The report cites Robco's modular technologies as the inspiration here. The idea is that the expensive parts, the sensors, the battery, the holographic emitter, are pop-out modules.
So if the camera gets better in 2027, I don't buy new glasses. I just buy the little camera cube and swap it out.
Exactly. It's like changing a light bulb instead of buying a new house. It increases the user's purchasing power because you aren't rebuying the plastic frame every time.
And it's more sustainable.
It's a move towards sustainability that's actually driven by consumer demand for better value.
And what's powering all this? Because rendering 3D worlds and monitoring blood sugar in real time takes some serious horsepower.
The report points to the Titan Blackwell processors. That seems to be the engine under the hood. You need massive, efficient processing to handle that much data without draining the battery in 10 minutes.
Right.
The Blackwell chips are the unsung heroes making the biological convergence possible. They're handling the AI processing locally on the device rather than sending everything to the cloud, which creates speed and efficiency.
So let's step back and look at the whole picture. The report breaks the market down into three segments.
Okay,
It
yeah.
seems like they're trying to categorize how different people will adopt this stuff.
Yes, the analysis team sees three distinct buckets of users in 2026. First, you have the neural wearables crowd.
These are the hardcore users, right? The early adopters.
Professionals and esports athletes.
Yeah.
If you're a surgeon operating remotely or a competitive gamer, you need that zero latency connection. You are going to get the Neuralink. It's all about performance.
Then there's the second bucket, AR glasses.
This is the mass market. This is the new smartphone. The report predicts that everyday users, moms, students, accountants, will adopt the glasses for the sheer convenience of that virtual desktop.
And the third bucket.
Biometric clothing. This is focused on the health conscious and the elderly, people who need that passive monitoring.
It is interesting the smartphone user isn't one of the buckets.
It is noticeably absent. And that brings us to the quote from the analyst Majid. It is probably the most provocative line in the entire document.
I bookmarked this. Majid says, "A gadget you can't feel isn't a gadget." And then he follows up with, "Handheld mobiles will become collector's items by 2028.
2028? That is an incredibly aggressive timeline. I mean, that's only 2 years after the date of this report.
It feels too fast, doesn't it? I mean, think about how long it took people to switch from flip phones to smartphones. It wasn't 2 years.
True, but the utility gap here is much wider. The switch from flip phone to iPhone was about getting a better screen. The switch from iPhone to biological convergence is about removing the device entirely.
Okay.
Majid's argument is that once you taste the freedom of having your hands free and your mind connected, holding a brick in your hand feels archaic instantly.
He had that other line,
Anyway.
communicating directly with our soul and mind.
It is a bit poetic for a tech report, but I think soul here just means intent. You intend to do something and it happens. There's no translation layer, no tapping, no swiping, just being.
It really challenges us to ask, are we ready to let go? We complain about our phones, about the distraction, but this technology doesn't solve the distraction. It just moves it closer to our eyes.
That is the double-edged sword. The report sells it as removing friction, but you know, friction is sometimes useful. Friction gives you time to think. If I can impulse buy a sweater just by touching a hologram and thinking, yes, that is a very different consumer landscape.
And maybe a different landscape for our privacy, too.
That is the big underlying question here.
If my shirt is broadcasting my stress levels and my glasses are mapping everything I see, who owns that data?
The report mentions the personal AI, implying it's local to you, but we know how these ecosystems work. Data is currency.
Of course.
And if that data is accessible, it paints a picture of you that is far more detailed than your browser history could ever be.
If you thought ad targeting was accurate when it knew what websites you visited, imagine ad targeting that knows your cortisol level is spiking and you're vulnerable to comfort food ads.
Precisely. The biological convergence means we are opening up our internal states to digital interpretation. It makes the system incredibly helpful, but also incredibly knowledgeable about who we are.
So to recap the reality of February 9th, 2026, we are looking at a world where the interface has, for all intents and purposes, dissolved.
It's three layers of interaction. You have the direct brain connection via Neuralink, which effectively ends lag.
Yep.
You have the visual overlay via Optic G4, replacing screens. And you have physical sensation via haptic rings, grounding the virtual in reality.
All wrapped in modular, sustainable hardware that we don't just throw away, powered by these Titan Blackwell chips.
It is a comprehensive ecosystem. It's not just a collection of gadgets. It's a new way of being human.
And for the learner listening to this, it is easy to write this off as cool sci-fi stuff, but why does this matter to them today?
Because these transitions happen slowly, then all at once. We are in the slowly phase right now.
Okay.
But the components, the AI, the miniaturization, the sensors, are all being built as we speak. This report is a roadmap. If you work in marketing, if you work in healthcare, if you work in design, you need to stop designing for screens and start designing for experiences.
You aren't designing for a user who is looking at your product anymore. You're designing for a user who is living inside it.
That is the key takeaway.
Which brings us to the end of our dive into the biological convergence. And I want to leave you with a thought that struck me while reading Majid's prediction about the death of the mobile phone.
Go on.
The report celebrates the fact that we no longer look at technology. We live in it. But if we live in it,
yeah.
And if our clothes know our stress levels and our glasses see everything we see, what part of us is still private?
That is the ultimate question. In the era of the smartphone, you could put the phone in a drawer and walk away. You could go offline.
But when your interface is your eyes and your nervous system,
yeah.
You can't exactly turn it off.
Yeah.
If the mobile phone dies, the concept of offline might just die with it.
Something to chew on while you look at your currently very flat screen.
Indeed.
If you had to pick one sense to digitize first, your sight, your touch, or your thoughts, which one would you choose? And which one would you fight to keep analog? Think about it. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. Catch you next time.